Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point. It's a shutdown showdown, again. For the fourth time in as many months, the federal government's flirting with closing its doors for business. Democrats want a DACA deal. Trump wants a wall. House Republicans want to move ahead on a stopgap funding bill. Freedom Caucus members don't. Will they reach a deal by midnight Friday? This hour on Point, the looming government shutdown. Joining me now from Washington is Cheryl Gay Stolberg, Washington correspondent for The New York Times, who's been covering this circus all week long. Cheryl, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
Cheryl, this morning, after the White House last night put out a statement embracing the House bill with its six-year extension of funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, the president tweeted out this morning that the Children's Health Insurance Program should not be part of any short-term deal on government funding. Now, the only word that I can think of to describe all this is nuts. Can you explain what's going on?
Well, as with all things Donald Trump, it's very difficult to explain what's going on. That tweet kind of blew up the Republican strategy to keep the government open. The Republicans had hope to sort of dare Democrats into voting for a stopgap spending measure by attaching to it a long-term extension of the very popular Children's Health Insurance Program. So now that the president says that CHIP, as it's called, should be part of a long-term solution, not a short-term extension, Democrats would appear to have a very easy excuse to oppose a stopgap measure. They can just say, well, the president wants the health program severed from the spending bill.
Can the Republicans in the House get 218 votes on their own without any help from Democrats to pass this, despite what the president said?
So I think that's the big question. And Republicans are in a squeeze. This Trump tweet really adds to Paul Ryan's headaches. The problem in the House is that there are defense hawks who want this long-term spending bill that will raise the caps on military spending. The defense hawks say that, you know, the military is really taking a hit, that more training and equipment is needed, and they are opposed to anything that doesn't raise those caps.
And Cheryl, so, just to make it clear for our listeners, those caps trace from that government by crisis standoff in 2011, when the Republicans were refusing to raise the debt limit, ultimately triggered negotiations with President Obama, and they agreed to cap government spending on levels that they ended up deciding they couldn't live with.
That's right. That's right. So this, in any event, this puts Speaker Ryan and senior House Republicans in the position of probably having to depend on Democrats for votes. And Leader Nancy Pelosi of the Democrats is vowing to keep her caucus unified unless there's some sort of deal, a DACA deal, as you mentioned, to protect young immigrants from deportation.
Now, if, in fact, they are able to get the votes in the House, what is the prospect for action in the Senate?
Well, the prospects look very rocky in the Senate. In the Senate, there's a bipartisan proposal to protect the Dreamers, the so-called Dreamers, these young immigrants from deportation. And Democrats are really demanding that the Dreamers be protected. In order for the House version of the short-term spending bill to pass the Senate, it would need nine Democratic votes, at least nine Democratic votes, possibly more because Senator John McCain isn't here and Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican as well, said that yesterday that he would vote against the continuing resolution. So I don't know where those nine or more Democrats are going to come from.
Now, Cheryl, we know that Democrats have a lot of seats that are up in November 2018 midterm elections, and many of those are in Trump-friendly states. Do you believe that the Democrats like Heidi Heitkamp and Claire McCaskill in Missouri, are they feeling pressure to go along with the Republicans for fear of losing their elections?
Well, some of them are. Certainly Joe Manchin in West Virginia, a state that Mr. Trump carried with nearly 68% of the vote, is worried. He said to me yesterday, I want to keep the government open. I'm going to work and work and work to keep the government open. But, John, I was surprised yesterday when I ran into Senator John Tester from Montana, also considered a red state, vulnerable Democrat. He said he will not vote for this spending bill. He says it has nothing to do with DACA. It's just a bad bill. He's sick of these short-term extensions.
I want to go back to this bizarre flip-flop by the president and the White House, and I wonder if you think it has anything to do with the simultaneous reversal, if you will, of description of the president's views on the wall. You had his chief of staff, John Kelly, yesterday, both in an interview on Fox and in meetings with Democratic members of Congress, say that the president's views had evolved, that he wasn't fully informed in the campaign when he said he was going to build this giant wall. And now he has reconciled himself to the idea that it's not going to be a 2,000-mile wall. It will be fencing in some places and won't exist in other places because of the terrain and so forth. The president then put out a tweet this morning saying, oh, I haven't changed anything. I've always known that. Do you think his feeling of being bruised by John Kelly's description might have influenced what he's doing on the CHIP program?
I don't know, John. That's a good theory. We know that President Trump likes to use Twitter as a distraction. So it might make sense that he put out this tweet on the spending bill in order to detract from the issue with the wall. However, he also, as you said, put out a tweet on the wall. So on our homepage right now, we've got two stories about the president's tweets, one about the possible shutdown and another about the wall controversy and what John Kelly said yesterday.
Now, Cheryl, having covered this, as I have multiple times before, is your gut that we are going to end up at an impasse and a shutdown, or that, as often happens, once they get right up to it, whether it's Friday or Saturday or Sunday, when they could say the government hasn't really shut down because it's the weekend, that they're going to get this figured out?
You know, I had a conversation about that with another reporter this morning, and I was saying, so what's your bet on a shutdown? And he said, well, no shutdown. And my gut also says no shutdown because nobody wants a shutdown. But as I said to him, well, okay, how do they get there? And he said, well, that's the part I haven't figured out yet. So I don't know. Maybe let's say the House passes a bill, this bill that it's considering. They get the 218. It comes to the Senate. The Senate balks and makes some kind of minor change, and then maybe Democrats extract a promise from Mitch McConnell to bring a immigration bill to the floor, and you know they fold a little bit. That's one path, but honestly, I don't know. Maybe you know, John.
Here's a theory that I have, which is that people have Donald Trump, by these reversals that he has made, and the one today wasn't the only one. He's done it in the past on, yeah, I'll sign the bill that you come up with, and then rejecting the compromise on immigration and DACA, that the president's made clear that he's the one who is holding up the potential for agreement. If that's the case, and if people have come to the view that he doesn't really have policy opinions, that he reacts moment to moment based on and can change his view on a dime depending on the last person who talks to him, it seems to me that you've then set up a situation where somebody could go to the president and say, we've got to change course or we're going to have a shutdown and it's going to be on you. And then in which case he would say, oh, okay, let's do the other thing.
Well, that could be. But, you know, I think we'll know a little bit more today. At 11:30 today, Speaker Ryan is going to have a press conference. I'm sure he will address all of this, and we'll see, you know, whether or not House leaders can round up enough support to put this on the floor and get a vote. And that's really going to be the first test. You know, you don't, it ain't over until the fat lady sings, or it ain't over until the lawmakers vote. So
Cheryl,
I don't think they'll They won't put a bill on the floor that if they can't pass it.
Cheryl, do you see Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, and Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, as having essentially identical interests here, or have they got different factors weighing on how they handle this?
Well, I think they clearly have different factors. In the House, Speaker Ryan wants to pass the bill with one of his predecessors, Denny Hastert, called a majority of the majority. In other words, they really want to pass it with only Republican votes so that Speaker Ryan can feel he has the backing of his caucus. And so that's his pressure is coming from the right, from the House Freedom Caucus, which also is uneasy about this spending bill, and the defense hawks. In the Senate, Mitch McConnell's pressure, if you would call it pressure, is coming from the left, because if they are going to pass this bill, as I said before, they've got to get a number of Democrats to go along with it. And he's got to figure out how he can do that and save face with his fellow Republicans, because his heart, well, and you might say McConnell also has pressure on the right because he's got hardliners like Tom Cotton and David Perdue, who don't want an immigration deal that they feel is too soft on border security.
Now, has the wall been taken off?
Washington mess.
Has the wall been taken out of the equation in the sense that Democrats have agreed to border security measures that the president could call a wall, or is there still a gap there?
Well, Democrats have agreed to border security measures that that one could call a wall, but they haven't agreed to the whole $18 billion that Donald Trump wants for a wall. So, I think there's still a lot of fighting going on there as well. And the president is demanding this wall with his tweets this morning.
A big Washington mess, as Cheryl Stolberg put it. We are discussing the possible government shutdown. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're discussing the looming government shutdown. I'm talking to Cheryl Gay Stolberg, Washington correspondent for The New York Times. And Cheryl, I want to play a brief clip and talk to you on this other side. Yesterday, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said revulsion toward the GOP spending bill was broad and strong within the Democratic Party, and that blame would be on the Republicans if the government shut down.
We want to do everything we can to avoid a shutdown, but we Democrats believe if there is one, it'll fall on the Republicans' backs, plain and simple.
Cheryl, is Chuck Schumer right about that, or the Democrats right about that?
Well, I think there's risks for both sides, but Chuck Schumer does have a point. The Republicans control the White House, the House, and the Senate. They're in charge, right? They have to prove they can govern. So if they can't pass the spending bill to keep the government open and the government shuts down, then it is on them. Also, there's sort of a historic precedent for this. In 2013, when the government shut down, Republicans were widely viewed as at fault for that. And there's also just the general sense in the public that Democrats like government, Republicans don't like government. So for all those reasons, the risk is grave for Republicans if there is a shutdown. That said, if Democrats withhold their votes because there's no immigration protections in this bill, it could be said, well, hey, you Democrats voted for the shutdown.
Of course, the Democrats would be taken off the hook in that scenario if the Republicans can't pass it in the House.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I would point to a longer history of this. We saw in the 1995 Gingrich era in the House, they shut down the government facing off against Bill Clinton. That went very badly for them. We saw in 2011, they triggered a debt crisis with respect to President Obama. That turned out badly for the country because we had the first ever credit downgrade for U.S. debt,
right,
and badly for the Republicans politically. So they've kind of branded themselves as the shutdown party, haven't they?
Yes, I think that's right. They have. And that's why there's a risk here because, as an old friend of mine used to say, the past's the best predictor of the future. So if the past is any guide, Republicans will be blamed.
Let's talk about the spending part of this, which we haven't. Set aside DACA and the CHIP funding. The spending side of the deal is they're living under these caps that were produced by this 2011 crisis. The Republicans want a big increase in defense, and President Trump proposed a corresponding decrease in domestic programs.
That is not going to fly with Democrats. Democrats want what they call parity. They want if you increase defense spending, you increase spending on domestic programs by the same amount. That's their line in the sand.
Right. So, but what I was getting ready to say, Cheryl, was that Republicans won't accept that either. Republicans had come to the realization beginning in 2013. I remember the House Appropriations Chairman Hal Rogers came out and had to pull a spending bill, and he came out and said, let's face it, these caps are too low. We can't live with these. And so you followed that with spending deals that raised the caps. So Republicans or the president put something on the table that even his own party wouldn't support.
Right. So that, well, you've identified another problem, John, and another reason why this is a really, really sticky wicket that the Republicans find themselves in.
All right. I want to bring in two additional big brains. Tom Davis, he's the director of federal government affairs at Deloitte, a global consulting firm. He was a Republican member of Congress for more than a decade, was also head of the Republicans' Congressional Campaign Committee. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And also on the line, we've got Steve Israel, who held the same job with the Democrats as head of their campaign committee. He's now a CNN political commentator, former Democratic congressman who served 16 years from New York. He's got a novel, Big Guns, that's coming out in April. Steve, thanks for joining us. And just let me know, are the big guns you're referring to somebody's Twitter feed?
No, actually, Big Guns is the gun lobby, and thank you for referring to Tom Davis and me as big brains. That's a first for both of us, I believe.
Well, let me start with you, Steve, and see how you game out what is actually likely to happen in this situation. Are we hyping something that's going to end with a whimper and a compromise, or do you see a genuine risk of actual crisis?
You know, I've been talking to former colleagues on both sides of the aisle. I've been talking to staff people who are involved in these negotiations, and I think you actually alluded to this just a few minutes ago, John, that nobody wants a shutdown, but nobody has figured out the strategy to avoid it. Normally, these things do end with a whimper. Folks go home from Congress and come back to deal with it a few weeks later. In this case, you have these tweets. You have a president who is not only negotiating against the House and the Senate and Democrats and Republicans, he appears to be negotiating against himself. And so this is the first time where I think I'm willing to say that there is more likely to be a shutdown because of the very unhelpful provocative tweets of a president whose word can't be relied on, not only by Democrats, but even his fellow Republicans.
Tom Davis, is the Republican president the principal obstacle for a deal, and will there be a deal?
Well, he's not an obstacle unless he won't sign a bill that the House and Senate can pass. And look, for the Republicans, the easy thing is to pass a clean bill. I'd include the CHIP bill in that, get it out of the House and put it in the Senate. And then if Senate Democrats don't support it, I think the blame will clearly be on them because you need 60 votes in the Senate to pass this, and the Republicans have passed a clean spending bill. Traditionally, I mean, we're trying to compare this to the 94 shutdown and what happened in 2013, in those areas. And I might add, both times it didn't seem to hurt the parties that were blamed for shutting it down when you look at the election results in the next election. And I was out in Fairfax County with 54,000 federal employees when the government shut down twice and was reelected with 67% in a district that was not particularly Republican. So I think the politics of this gets overplayed, but the reality is the public tends to blame the party that tries to attach things to a spending bill. And so saying, I'm not going to vote for spending bill because it doesn't include this, this, or this, I think there's Democrats face some problem should that be the case. On the other hand, if the Republicans can't get their act together and get a bill out of the House within their own caucus, I think the blame would and should be squarely on them. I do think at the end of the day, the president will sign whatever's on his desk.
So you think the tweet about chip shouldn't be part of it, we should ignore that, is not serious, that whatever gets there,
he may not want it part of it. Yeah, John, I think if it's in there, he'll sign it. And if it's out of it, he'll sign it. He's making his views of the moment known. But I'd agree with Steve that these things go all over the lot, and it's a very dynamic negotiation both within the White House and within Congress.
Now, Tom, seven Republican senators have now signed on to this compromise on the DACA program. We remember that the president said a week ago that he wanted to see a bipartisan compromise. Is it not obvious that this standoff ends with Republicans swallowing this compromise that seven of their members are sponsoring and pass the caps that they're very close to agreeing on? It seems like we can see the solution right in front of us.
Well, that's a solution. I think there are a number of them. Look, you need 60 votes in the Senate to pass this, and seven Republicans don't give you 60 votes. You can still sit up and somebody can stand up on the floor and filibuster the thing and put it through a fairly lengthy process to try to change
that. Do you doubt that with seven Republican co-sponsors that they could get 60 votes in the Senate?
Well, 49 Democrats and 7 Republicans. Yeah, that doesn't get me to 60.
I'm at 56.
Right, of course. But, Steve Israel, wouldn't you expect that if you have that many Republicans signing on to a compromise that the president himself says he wants, you'd have the others fall in line and vote for it?
In a normal environment, I would. And I think we all hope that we end up there. Look, this is all about math in the Senate and the House. I sat with Nancy Pelosi. I was in the Democratic leadership. I sat through these moments multiple times, the 2011 debt crisis, the shutdown, et cetera, et cetera. And bottom line is this, you know, the Republicans have 239 seats in the House of Representatives, but they don't have enough votes to get to the 215 that they'll presumably need. Democrats on both sides of the Congress, of the Capitol, House and Senate, will make up the difference between what Republicans can provide and what they need. But Nancy Pelosi's style, and again, I witnessed this. I witnessed it when she was on the phone with John Boehner and Paul Ryan. What she will say is, we'll get you the difference, but if you're going to need our votes to put a budget over the top, that budget's going to need to reflect our priorities and values. That's no different than any negotiation in any setting. The bill in the Senate can probably create a critical mass among House Republicans and House Democrats, and also a critical mass in the Senate to resolve this. The problem that Paul Ryan has is he's like Sisyphus, you know, pushing that boulder, you know, up the cliff. Every time he makes progress, he loses more Freedom Caucus votes and other votes, which means he needs more Democratic votes. And so the bottom line is, if we have a sensible compromise that includes some resolution to Dreamers and includes CHIPS funding, we can spare the American people this constant news about government shutdowns and move on with the functioning of government.
Tom, I want to revisit one point again. I mean, I can count to 56 also, but Mitch McConnell yesterday said that he would make his decision once he figures out what the president is for. So, and if the president's for it, he'll put it on the floor. So if you have this immigration compromise, if the president says he's for it, they put it on the floor. Mitch McConnell himself will vote for it, and so will multiple other Republicans, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, the difficulty in the Senate, as you know, is one member can get up and even if you have 60 votes, he can you can tie the thing up for 3 days, and by that time the string has run out. because we'd run out of funding, Saturday morning. So there are some difficulties all the way around. Look, traditionally a clean spending bill that refers only to spending goes through and the public supports that. When you start attaching other legislation to it and making that a condition for voting for a spending bill, it gets more complicated to explain. Now, I understand why Dreamers and the S-Chip and everybody would want to put that on, because this is a vehicle that has to move, and it's probably the easiest way to get that legislation through. So I don't blame everybody for trying, but at the end of the day, I think the public has traditionally gone after the party that wants to put attachments onto these bills. Clean spending bills is something the New York Times and the Post have always argued for. They may take a different view now that Republicans control, given their editorial bent.
You know, I'd love to respond to that. I respect.
Sure, go ahead.
He's a good friend.
Right, he just hit the New York Times. I'm going to have to let Cheryl respond to that.
Yeah, but it's fine.
I hardly think that the Republicans are making their decisions by what the New York Times and.
Well, I didn't say that. I just said I think the editorial boards there have traditionally argued for clean spending bills in every one of these.
Yes, but my
gut is this time they'll say, well, we ought to include something.
We've never had a situation, however, where Democrats are being asked to keep government open so that its employees can deport up to 700,000 or over 700,000 Dreamers. We have a crisis on our hands. The president, who said he was for a resolution to Dreamers, is now fighting a resolution to Dreamers. We have a situation where it is possible, based on a variety of court decisions and other circumstances, that the federal government will begin deporting these children who came here innocently. And for anyone to expect that governments, that the Democrats will keep the government functioning so that it can deport those children, which is heresy to fundamental democratic values of fairness, tolerance, and common sense, is itself ridiculous. Democrats are not going to go with a deal that allows the government to stay open while deporting these children.
Well, see if you win that argument. But you could say the same thing for government spending money, continuing fighting wars, doing abortions. This plays all across the line. Everybody has different bents on this. All I'm saying is traditionally, clean spending bills have been the argument of the editorial boards, and because these are such high priorities for some of the for some constituency groups, I understand why it gets messy. But you don't usually win that argument with the public, who says you should keep the government open.
All right, we're going to go from the voices of the establishment that we've been talking to the voices of the people who are our listeners. Kathy's on the line from Baltimore, Maryland. Kathy, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Hi, John. Well, it's more of a statement. I have to point out there's a lot of kind of he said, she said sort of thing with, Republicans versus Democrats. And to be perfectly honest, it seems like any bills are going to be resolved or passed unless they make the conscious decision to come together and work together with each other to pass what they want. Whether that be a Democratic or a Republican bill, it doesn't matter. Either way you look at it, you have to work together, and they just aren't.
Kathy, that's a fascinating point. I want to go to Cheryl Stolberg. Cheryl, is this simply a failure of will by people on both sides?
Well, you could call it a failure of will, or you could call it the result of the hyper-partisanship that has so divided our country. I think that Kathy expresses a point of view that many Americans share, which is we just want to get something done, and we're tired of the fighting. Until Republicans and Democrats start working together, that sentiment is going to prevail in the public. And I think both parties are damaging themselves because they're squabbling so much like children.
I want to play another piece of sound. This is from Sarah Sanders, who's the White House press secretary. And she was sparring with the press yesterday about who's at fault and why this isn't happening. Take a listen to Sarah Sanders.
We want a deal on DACA. They want a deal on DACA. We want a deal on border security. They want a deal on border security. They've said that they support these things. They've also said in the past that they support merit-based immigration. I don't see what is complicated here. We all want the same things. Democrats need to quit playing politics and start doing what they were elected to do, and that is governing. And they need to come to the table with a real deal based on the parameters that were discussed.
Tom Davis, isn't that what the Lindsey Graham bipartisan plan with Dick Durbin and the seven Republican senators have actually come to the table with?
Well, I think they have. I think they've tried to do it. We'll see where the votes, you know, where the votes lie and if they can even get it to a vote. But I think, you know, your listener makes a really good point. And that is, I think the vast majority of the public really blames both parties. But as long as one party is getting published, getting punished, and the other party is not getting punished, it makes it harder, I think, to get an agreement. But I think the public is rightfully frustrated with this whole process.
Tom Davis, hold that thought. Cheryl Stolberg, Washington correspondent for The New York Times, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, John.
We're discussing the looming government shutdown. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about the possible government shutdown. I'm talking to Tom Davis, a Republican who represented Virginia in Congress and ran the House Republican Campaign Committee. Steve Israel, a Democrat who held the same job and represented New York in Congress for more than a decade. Guys, I want to start by playing a clip from Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, who you both served with for many years. He was urging Democrats and Republicans to compromise during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday.
To my Democratic friends, I say it's time to stop pushing for a clean DREAM Act. As a matter of simple political reality, it's not going to happen. To my Republican friends, I say we're not going to get the sun, moon, and the stars. We should push for the best deal we can get, but we shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Steve Israel, give it up on the Clean DREAM Act?
No, I don't think so. Not if, well, yes, give it up if the Republicans have the 215 votes they need to pass in the House and can muster the votes in the Senate. But short of that, if they need Democratic votes, they're going to have a budget that reflects some Democratic principles. Not all Democratic principles, but at least those principles that are vital to the Democrats, and a Clean DREAM Act is one of them.
And Tom, from your side, are your members, as they have been known to do once in a while in the past, letting the perfect be the enemy of the good?
That's the rule on the Republican side, I think, which is why I think we've been unable to get our act together on so many different things. I'm going to say what I said at the start of the program. If the Republicans can get their 215 votes in the House to pass a clean resolution, and I'd add S. Chip because I think that adds a political dynamic that gives Democrats some reason to vote for it and send it to the Senate. The Senate has can do one of two things.
Hold on a second. I thought you were the advocate of clean spending bills with nothing else attached to it.
Well, I am, but if you can but things generally get attached. I'm just saying a clean spending bill is the clean way to go because this is a spending bill. It's not a huge legislative Christmas tree. But look, if you can get that through with 215 votes, because I think there's a consensus that needs to be done, that's not quite as controversial. And then you send it over to the Senate. Senate can do one of two things. They can accept it or reject it. And I think if they reject it, Democrats all of a sudden get blamed because they're the ones that are letting the perfect be the enemy of the good and are basically saying we're not going to fund government. We want to do other things that we're willing to shut the government down over. But the second part of that is they can amend it. They can send this a Graham Durbin bill back, attach it to that. And I think at that point, the House is then faced with the dilemma and the pressure is on the Republicans and the blame shifts at that point and basically try to stuff the Republicans in the House. And I think it would pass. Steve, don't you think?
I think so. Look, it's like watching a classical basketball game, you know, where it's going to get interesting in the last 2 minutes. Tom, you know, in the last 2 minutes, that's when stuff is going to be proposed and stuff is going to be taken out. And so it's those last 2 minutes where you have all the action. I think we're going to come down to that. I think there's going to be a lot of positioning, a lot of rhetoric, you know, we come down to those last 2 minutes. I also want to say something else that I think is pertinent to all of this, and Kathy kind of raised the point, your prior caller, about people, you know, blaming both Democrats and Republicans. What we haven't talked about is how all of this comes during a midterm election. You know, midterm election politics is, I believe, really driving where we are now and will continue to drive us. And so if you're in the Republican base, you're going to believe what Republicans say. If you're in a Democratic base, you're going to believe what the Democrats say. If you're somewhere in the middle, you know, you throw up your hands and maybe one particular finger at both parties. The thing is that in a midterm election, you've got to turn out your base. And so part of this calculation in determining whether government is going to be funded or not is not about the deadline of February 16th or January 19th. It is about what's going to happen in November. And nobody wants to make a decision now that is going to dampen their turnout in a midterm election where turnout is historically low. Would you agree with that, Tom?
Let me,
a lot of midterm politics.
Tom, hold that thought. I want to go to the phones because we got Reggie on the line from Oskaloosa, Iowa. Reggie, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I think there will be a shutdown, probably a short-lived, very short-lived, but then it will be a talking point for the Democrats of poor leadership on the Republican side to help them try and take back the House in the midterm.
Which side are you on, Reggie?
I'm a Republican, have been for a few decades now. Grew up a Democrat, but changed my mind. But I know they expect that there are media outlets that will give them support, and just they'll nonstop blame the Democrat or the Republicans and give them cover for the midterm election.
Reggie, thanks for your call. I'm going to put that to both of my guests, but first to Tom Davis. Tom, do you believe that's what Democrats are up to with this crisis, and will it work in November?
So I agree with what Steve said, is that this is about midterm politics. I think that if the Republicans stay united on this issue, which they haven't shown a tendency to do, but should be able to get it through the House and it's blocked by Democrats in the Senate, I think the blame probably shifts. But, so many voters are in their own camps at this point. Doesn't make a lot of difference. I would say this, though, to my Republican friends, having been campaign chairman, is they need to change the trajectory of this midterm. If you take a look at the atmospherics, the polling and everything right now, they have a pretty good wave coming at them. And on balance, a shutdown probably doesn't help them unless they can get it for the right reason. It may be the Democrats could overplay their hand this first time around if they try to attach the DREAM Act and shut the government down over that. What will happen if that happens is both parties will wait a few days, wait for the editorials and the public to weigh in, and then whoever's losing seems to cave. That's been my experience. Steve, would you agree with that?
I agree. A lot of this is going to be determined by the response members get when they go home to their districts, do their town hall meetings, those that are doing town hall meetings, and read their local papers. Right now, the polling strongly favors Democrats. I just saw a poll from Hart Research that in the five reddest battleground states, Missouri, Montana, North Dakota, and West Virginia, where Trump is leading by double digits, voters side with Democrats 51-45 against including funding for the wall, and 55% say that it would be irresponsible for the president to provoke a shutdown.
Steve, do you think a shutdown would make the Democratic wave bigger?
It depends. It always depends on the circumstances. So in theory, yes, people generally hold Republicans responsible for a shutdown. There's no intuition that people have that Republicans are trying to protect government while Democrats are trying to dismantle it. So I disagree respectfully with Tom on who gets the blame. Republicans generally get the blame. If the shutdown is caused by the refusal of Republicans to resolve DACA, I think that increases the already massive energy that Democrats have with turnout in the midterm election, and it adds seats to what I think is going to be a Democratic majority already in November.
So this is how I know neither of you guys is still in the House, as you used the word respectfully there. let's go back to the phones.
It's well-earned, Steve, on your part.
Esmeralda is on the line from Hickory, North Carolina. Esmeralda, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Two things is basically the DACA could have been resolved by Trump by itself. He's the one that created it. That's first. And secondly, it is very obvious from the Republican and Trump that he doesn't care for children in general, because he's holding the DACA in hostage and also the CHIP in hostage. So, yes, I just don't think this is a party or a man that cares for children no matter what.
Thanks, Esmeralda, for your call. Tom Davis, are Republicans a party that cares about children?
Of course they care about children. In fact, the S-CHIP program was a Republican program to begin with. In the Virginia legislature, my wife carried the S-CHIP bill there through some hostile ground. So, no, of course we care. And that's just part of the narrative. I mean, we're all in our own little bubbles and think. I think both parties care. They have different constituency bases. And as Steve says, right now, this is kind of a testing ground as you go into the midterms, unfortunately. Look, I represented a district with 54,000 federal employees. I would have voted for anything to keep these people out working, keep their paychecks coming. On this issue, I always felt pretty strongly. I would go with whichever party offered any kind of reasonable path to keeping things open. It's just irresponsible for a fiscal year that started October 1st that here we are in January arguing about funding it for the year. What happens? People need to understand what happens. I think one year it was May when they funded the government for a year where the fiscal year started October 1st. And then you spend all this money in just a few months and it gets wasted. This is a tremendous waste and inefficiency that we shouldn't have to put up with. And it's become a soap opera.
Back to the phones. We've got Adam on the line from Frankfort, Kentucky. Adam, welcome to On Point. Go ahead.
Morning. I don't think this is an issue as much as it is accountability problem. You see, I was in the military back in 95. And our first sergeant said, you might not get paid. Don't worry. The military will take care of you. To me, I'm a constitutionalist. And if they can't pass the budget, then they're not doing their constitutional job. I think they should treat it like a conclave. Once they get to the point where they're talking about shutting down the government, they don't leave. It changes to a 24-hour session. And just like with the Pope, because the Catholic Church stops when that happens, they're... Every time there's been a conclave, there's been a pope within 15 days.
Adam, do you fault one party more than the other in this situation?
No, because in 1995, they were different issues. In 2013, they were grave, but different issues. And this year, they're slightly different issues than they were before. It's not a matter of issues. It's a matter of accountability and getting the job done. And if they were sealed inside Congress until they passed the budget, which is their constitutional job, then they wouldn't let it go for weeks and months at a time.
Adam, thanks for your call. Steve Israel, would that solution, a lot of people suggest that, lock them in a room and, you know, don't let them go to the bathroom until they've solved the deal. Would that work? And secondly, are Democrats... do they have anxiety about the impression that military troops would not be paid while they're fighting with Republicans?
Well, actually, you know, Adam probably knows and Tom knows that this is like a conclave. There are actually cardinals in Congress. They're the senior members of the Appropriations Committee who try and figure out how to get these bills passed. You know, there are lots of ideas like lock them in a room or no budget, no pay. Members of Congress don't get paid unless they pass a budget. You know, these are talking points. I think that the problem, John, is rooted in a much more serious problem that America has right now, and that is, of the 435 congressional districts, the vast majority have been redistricted to the far left or the far right. You can lock people in a room for 24 hours, but if most of those people go back home to a district that is far left or far right, they're going to spend that 24 hours defending their bases and their positions. And so if we really want to get some kind of resolution to this constant squabbling and the finger-pointing and the partisan gridlock, we have to do is have some kind of nonpartisan redistricting that will bring more moderates, more centrists to Congress who can get a compromise, not in 24 hours, but could be sooner than that.
Tom, you like that idea?
Well, I do. I think most of the cause of the single-party districts is just residential sorting patterns. People who think alike live in like-minded enclaves, but you've got... look, gerrymandering and the Voting Rights Act both participate. I think, are participants in this and make it worse.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Jim on the line from Tampa, Florida. Jim, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Hi, John. Just wondering why, with the capriciousness of Trump's views changing daily, sometimes hourly, why Congress doesn't just come up with a solution that is veto-proof, and put it in front of him. If he vetoes it, then they just go through and pass it and move on to the next issue. That puts it all on Trump. Also, I don't know whether historically that has ever happened. I know that vetoes have been overridden when the opposite party is in power in Congress, but Is that a possibility, and is that not the most logical solution to moving forward?
Jim, that's a fascinating idea. Let me ask both of you, is that within the realm of possibility?
Let me start. I think that President Trump will sign whatever they put in front of him. He's been all over the lot.
So no veto under any circumstance.
Yeah, I think if the Republican House and the Senate pass this, that they'll prevail on him to sign it. If he doesn't, then I think that's a different issue. Congress may end up in revolt, and I think he'd have to face that. But I think he'll sign it. I think the difficulty here is just getting Congress to be able to get these appropriation bills. And you've got no appropriation bills done. None. In the past, it would be a handful of appropriation bills were passed. A bunch weren't. But because of this issue with the budget caps this year, where they're trying to raise it overall and they're arguing over that. Look, they've had October. This was due. You have to ask, what have they been doing? And deadlines kind of drive decisions sometimes. But it's sad that this has become, I mean, Republican or Democrat now, this is the new normal in the way congressional operate.
Steve, do you agree that President Trump doesn't actually have any policy opinions and therefore would sign anything?
I totally agree. I do not see any circumstance in which the president vetoes a bill. And by the way, he can sign the bill and tweet that he wants to veto it at the same time. I think Tom is
can you tweet the veto?
This may be a new constitutional prerogative, I think Tom is right. I see no circumstance in which the president would veto this budget unless he wants to continue a narrative that takes focus off Russia or other issues that aren't convenient to him.
Tom Davis, have you ever seen a president in your lifetime who did not have policy opinions?
Well, I've seen them not have it on one issue after another. I think in many ways Trump is the least ideological. But, you know, he's unorthodox in a number of other ways in terms of what traditional presidents have been, at least in this century.
Steve, any precedent for a president with this kind of blank slate on policy?
No, everything about this administration is unprecedented.
Tom Davis, Director of Federal Government Affairs at Deloitte, former Republican congressman from Virginia. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Steve Israel, CNN political commentator, former Democratic congressman from New York. Thanks for joining me, too.
You bet. Thanks.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, Steve Bannon subpoenaed by Robert Mueller. Talk of a government shutdown again. And the Koreas will march under one flag at the Winter Olympics. Our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.